Good day, and welcome to SNC-Lavalin's second quarter 2016 earnings conference call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Denis Jasmin, Vice President of Investor Relations. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to SNC-Lavalin's 2016 second quarter earnings conference call. Our earnings announcement was released this morning, and we have posted a slide presentation on the investors section of SNC-Lavalin website, which we will refer to during this call. Today's call is also being webcast. You can find the link on our website, and a replay will be available within 24 hours. With us today are Neil Bruce, President and Chief Executive Officer, and Sylvain Girard, Executive Vice President and Chief Financial Officer. Before we begin, I would like to ask everyone to limit themselves to two or three questions to ensure that all analysts have an opportunity to participate. You are welcome to return to the queue for any follow-up questions. I would also like to remind you that, as detailed on slide three, certain statements made during today's call and slide presentation about expected future events and financial results may be forward-looking and therefore subject to risk, uncertainties, and assumptions. These are described in our financial documents and could cause actual results to differ materially from what may be inferred from the forward-looking statements. Such forward-looking statements represent management expectation as of today and accordingly are subject to change. We disclaim any intention or obligation to update any forward-looking statement except as required by law. You will find more information about the risks and uncertainties associated with our business in our financial documents filed with the Canadian Securities Commissions, which can also be found on our website. I would now like to turn the conference over to Neil Bruce.
Thank you, Denis. Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. On today's call, I will briefly review our Q2 results and discuss our segment performance and outlook. I will then ask Sylvain to talk about the Q2 results in more detail. Let me start on slide four with a brief comment on our Q2 financial performance. Despite the turbulent markets and the persistent softer commodity prices, our efforts in delivering consistent execution continue to drive financial performance and sustained earnings improvement across the company. For a fourth quarter in a row, we have delivered solid Q2 earnings with an adjusted net income from E&C of 71 million dollars, or 0.48 per diluted share. Our SG&A decreased by 10% in the second quarter compared to Q2 2015, building upon the 19% reduction in the first quarter. We continue to expect to deliver 100 million dollars SG&A benefits for the financial year. These reductions are mainly the results of the successful implementation of the step change program launched in Q4 2015. Our backlog and cash positions remain solid with 12.5 billion dollars and 1.1 billion dollars respectively. We're also pleased with the progress of our Operational Excellence Program, which we launched at the end of the first quarter of this year. We are already seeing an impact across the organization in making us simpler, more agile, and client-focused. We are committed to our strategy and actions to deliver consistently improving financial performance, which will include a target of an annualized adjusted E&C EBITDA margin of 7% in 2017. As previously indicated, we will continue to take all additional measures throughout the year if required to ensure we meet this goal. Let's now look at each of our segments, beginning with slide five. Our oil and gas sector continues to perform well, delivering a 7.9% EBIT margin in the second quarter of 2016 and kept a consistent strong backlog of 4 billion dollars. We continue to see many prospects and opportunities ahead, particularly in the Middle East region. We're also starting to see some opportunities in Canada in the downstream-related activities where clients are trying to maximize their production. Our capabilities across all phases of the project life cycle make us the right choice for these clients. As you all know, the oil and gas industry continues to face very challenging global market conditions, including low and volatile oil prices. Again, this quarter, this impacted our Production Processing Solutions, Valerus, in the U.S. However, Our other oil and gas businesses made up for this and continue to do well. We expect this sector to continue to perform well in 2016 and be one of the main contributors to our net income. I am also very pleased with our July announcement regarding the appointment of Christian Brown to the newly created position of Corporate Development Officer and the appointment of Martin Adler as President Oil and Gas. Both positions will become effective on August the 15th and will report directly to me. Chris's new position is a sign of our future ambition to deliver on our strategy, to grow our profitability, size, and geographic presence even further by 2018. His strong leadership and business experience makes him the right person to spearhead mergers and acquisitions activities, inorganic growth implementation, and further drive operational excellence. Chris will also ensure that an in-depth and thorough handover is completed with Martin through the remainder of 2016. Martin has 25 years of experience in the oil and gas refining, petrochemical, engineering and construction, transportation industries. He understands and brings with him customer relationships, sector knowledge, and operational excellence. He's a great addition, and I welcome him to the team. Now, turning to slide 6, we continue to remain cautious about the mining and metallurgy market, as it continues to be affected by a lower level of activity due to lower commodity prices. But as we're seeing some good opportunities, particularly outside Canada in the fertilizer sectors, approximately $100 million of new contract awards were during the quarter. These are mainly contracts such as pre-feasibility studies, some of which should eventually turn into larger projects. Moving to slide 7, the power sector continues to do well, sustaining their EBIT margins. We are pleased that we have been awarded further contracts in the highly attractive nuclear sector in the second quarter. This sector has good potential for other large projects as governments and power companies refurbish existing reactors or build new reactors in order to meet electricity demand. We're also enthusiastic about the MOU signed in July between China and Argentina, reaffirming their plans to construct 2 new nuclear power reactors in Argentina. At the end of the quarter, the power revenue backlog remains solid at $2.8 billion. Now turning to the infrastructure segment on slide 8. We continue to see some tangible results from our step change and operational excellence programs, improving our efficiency, processes, and execution. As you can see, the trailing 12-month EBIT percentage continues to improve, and we are delivering sustainable results quarter after quarter. We also continue to see many opportunities for our infrastructure sector, particularly in Canada, here in Quebec, and in Ontario. Total backlog for the infrastructure segment was $5.4 billion at the end of the quarter. Please note that while the infrastructure backlog levels fluctuates on a quarterly basis, it is steadier over the longer period, as many of our projects are completed over several years and many new projects are worth more than $1 billion. On June the 29th, the company was pleased to announce that a notice of substantial completion was issued for the turnkey construction component of the St. Justine project, slightly ahead of our revised schedule. This completes our last challenging legacy project. On June 30th, we were also pleased to announce that we had reached the agreement to sell the company's non-core real estate facilities management businesses in Canada for $45 million, which includes facilities, property, and realty management. This business generated approximately $260 million in revenues in 2015 and had a backlog of approximately $550 million at the end of the quarter. This sale is a result of the review carried out under SNC-Lavalin's Operational Excellence Program, which identified these activities as non-core to the business strategy. This will allow us to better align our operations and maintenance business in Canada with SNC's core sectors. We will now focus on providing operations and maintenance services in transportation, social infrastructure, P3's industrial power, defense, logistics, and oil and gas. And lastly, capital on slide 9. The new structure that we're planning to put in place for a certain number of our mature North American concessions is progressing well, but it is taking slightly longer than we expected. This is mainly due to the variety and complexity of the assets. We also want to ensure that we structure the transaction properly for the potential partner. We're now targeting an announcement in the third quarter of this year. We're pleased with Highway 407's very good results, with increases in Q2 compared to Q2 last year of 13% in revenues and 14% in EBITDA. We were also pleased with the 11% increase in the quarterly dividend. So in summary, we maintained a strong cash balance and backlog and achieved good results in all four sectors. Our efforts in delivering consistent execution continue to drive financial performance and sustainable earnings improvements across the company. For the fourth quarter in a row, we are delivering good results and we are seeing many opportunities across all of our sectors, but particularly in infrastructure, power, and oil and gas. Therefore, we're maintaining our guidance with regards to the adjusted E&C EPS of 150 to 170 and EBITDA margin outlook. With that, I'll pass the call over to Sylvain to go over our financial results in a little more detail. Sylvain.
Thank you, Neil. Good afternoon, everyone. Let's now turn to slide 10. E&C revenues for Q2 2016 totaled $2 billion, slightly lower than Q2 2015, reflecting a decrease in the mining and metallurgy segment as it continues to be affected by a lower level of activity due to the lower commodity prices and the completion or near completion of certain major projects. Q2 2016 total SG&A expenses amounted to $201 million, $23 million below Q2 2015. Business development activities increased compared to Q2 2015, but were more than offset by a G&A expenses decrease compared to the same period last year. This resulted in a total SG&A expenses reduction of 10% year-on-year. ENC SG&A over ENC revenues came in at 9.3%, 0.6% lower than Q2 2015, despite a decrease in volume. This improvement, as Neil said, is mainly due to the successful implementation of the step change program in late 2015. We therefore remain confident on delivering the already announced $100 million of benefits for this fiscal year. For the fourth quarter in a row, EBIT margins were positive for all segments. The adjusted EBITDA margin from ENC improved to 5.8% compared to 2.2% in Q2 2015, driven by an increase in the gross margin to revenue ratio and lower SG&A expenses. The adjusted EBITDA amount from ENC increased to $118 million compared to $49 million, reflecting increased contribution versus prior year from infrastructure by $60 million, oil and gas by $6 million, and power by $4 million. Adjusted net income from ENC in Q2 2016 was $71 million or 48 cents per diluted share, compared to $8 million in Q2 2015 or 5 cents per diluted share. Net income from capital decreased to $36 million in Q2 2016 compared to $45 million in Q2 2015, reflecting an increase in business development expenses on new prospects and other SG&A expenses. Our cash balance and backlog remained strong at the end of June 16, with a balance of $1.1 billion and $12.5 billion, respectively. Now moving on to slide 11. The slide shows the main drivers of the variances in the segment EBIT for ENC. As you see, all sectors have improved their EBIT margin ratio versus Q2 2015. Let me comment on two of those. First, the oil and gas segment. The EBIT increase in Q2 2016 to $71 million, which represents a 7.9% EBIT margin compared to 7.3% in Q2 2015. The increase in EBIT was mainly due to lower SG&A expenses, as well as a higher volume of activity and gross margin ratios on project, excluding our Valeris division. The activities of that division, based in the United States, continues to be challenged from difficult global market conditions. We have taken steps to adjust to these market conditions, recently making some structural changes, such as consolidating certain of their facilities together. In addition, the major project awarded and announced in March in Saudi Arabia will have a significant Valeris component. The capabilities of Valeris were a critical advantage for us in the selection process. Secondly, the infrastructure and construction segment delivered a positive $14 million EBIT in Q2 2016, which represents an EBIT margin of 3.4% compared to a loss of $43 million or a negative EBIT margin of 9.8% in Q2 2015. This improvement is the result of a higher gross margin from improved project efficiency and execution and lower G&A. Now moving on to slide 12. Our revenue backlog at quarter end remains solid at $12.5 billion, which is slightly up versus Q2 2015. Our backlog was composed of 45% in reimbursable contracts and 55% in fixed price contracts, in line with Q1 2016. Bookings for the second quarter were $1.2 billion. Overall, we have maintained a high-quality, diversified backlog. Note that the June backlog includes $2 billion for our O&M segment. Following our agreement in June to sell our non-core real estate facilities management business in Canada, we expect a resulting decrease of approximately $550 million in the backlog once the transaction is completed. Turning to slide 13. Year-to-date, our operations essentially used $322 million in cash. This usage is primarily driven by an increased working capital requirement of approximately $392 million on certain major projects. Additionally, the completion of our legacy projects and the cash outflows related to step change contributed to this operating cash consumption. Compared to the same period last year, we have been able to reduce our operating cash flow usage. We expect that this situation would continue to improve by year-end and that we will close the year with a positive operating cash flow contribution. On the right-hand side of the page, we provide a simplified cash balance analysis which highlights the main variances for the first 6 months of the year. We see that the cash generated by the capital by the sale of capital investments, mainly Malta, was more than offset by various outflows, particularly $58 million of project-related capital expenditures, $43 million of net increase from long-term concession arrangements, $114 million of repayment for project financing loans, and $78 million of dividends to shareholders. Now let's turn to slide 14, which presents our financial position. Other than for cash, for which the variation was explained on the prior slide, we see a resulting decrease of over $750 million in current liabilities. This decrease is mainly due to working capital requirements on ongoing projects, repayments of project financing, and a decrease in restructuring provisions. Lastly, note that our recourse debt-to-capital ratio remained low at 9%. And lastly, on slide 15, we have maintained our 2016 outlook, which is an adjusted diluted EPS from ENC in the range of $1.50 to $1.70. This concludes my presentation. We can now open the lines for questions. Thank you.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure that your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, press star 1 to ask a question. We'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal for questions. And we'll take our first question from Yuri Link of Canaccord Genuity. Please go ahead.
Hey, guys. Good quarter. I guess the obvious question is, you know, how do we square away the guidance? You know, at the midpoint, kind of implies about 74 cents in the back half of the year versus 86 in the first. So, and I think you did like 90 cents in the back half of last year. So, just being conservative, or do you feel, you know, that the bottom half is probably unlikely, or just any color how we can square that away?
Thank you very much. The I mean, the way that we always look at this, or we certainly have for the past year or so, is that we're constantly looking at a risk analysis against our sectors and our major projects. And we look and we carry out that exercise on a quarterly basis. And basically, when we've done that, that confirms that we are still within that range. So therefore, that's basically what we're confirming. I mean, there's still, you know, still a number of projects to work through. So we feel that the range still represents where we feel we'll be at the end of the year.
I get that, but I mean, is it some projects that you're not sure? Is there things that are up in the air in terms of contingencies or uncertainty in terms of when projects might start up or wrap up, or is it a timing thing, or I just can't square away, you know, you'd be looking at kind of a 15% drop in earnings vis-a-vis the first half just to get to the midpoint, and, you know, the lower end would be even below that. So just trying to figure out what has to happen to get to kind of the low end of guidance.
Yeah, I don't think we're saying anything about where we are within the guidance. You know, we think we've had a particularly strong quarter this quarter, and when we look at the full year, we're just maintaining the guidance. It's pretty difficult to give any more than that.
Okay. Just want to switch to cash generation. I kind of get the working capital investment, but just, you know, operating cash flow before we even get to the working capital changes was only $9 million. Can you just talk to what impaired the kind of cash conversion into operating cash, specifically around some of the changes in provisions for contract losses that were rather chunky in the quarter?
Yeah, we had the completion on St. Justine that basically consumes quite a bit of that cash. So the legacy project, as you know, they were at zero EBIT. So they don't contribute EBIT, but they just are cash users. So that would be for that. On the rest of it, on the working capital usage, I mean, we have had some significant growth in Saudi, you know, since the beginning of the year. And that's that from a working capital perspective, this doesn't work like some of the other EPCs that are cash positive at the start. So on that, we're just catching our rhythm on this, and we should see that kind of convert to cash a little bit faster in the second half.
Okay. And in your prepared remarks, you mentioned something about kind of break even by the end of the year. Are you talking about working capital will be kind of a neutral drag on cash flow by year end, or you still anticipate there'll be an investment in working capital when all is said and done by year end?
No, what I meant was by year end we should have a break even to positive operating cash flow. So that's what I meant. So from net income, including working capital and the other items in the operating cash flow. So right now we close the second quarter with a user of 322. So we see that 322 becoming zero or plus by the end of the year. That's what I mean.
Okay. Thank you. I'll turn it over.
Thank you. And we'll take our next question from the line of Michael Tupholme of TD Securities. Please go ahead.
Thanks. I was wondering if you can quantify the impact of the closeout benefits you saw in the mining and metallurgy segment and possibly also the unfavorable cost reforecast in the power segment.
Yeah, I think the mining sector is high because of the lower revenues and the closeout or getting near the closeout on a couple of the big projects. So from that perspective, you know, the good news is we're closing them out. We're releasing some contingency, but with the overall revenues, that's what's driving, effectively driving the margin up in mining. And, you know, we expect that it's going to stay high, probably not at the not at the levels it was at in the quarter, but it's still going to stay high throughout throughout the year until mining picks up sometime in the future.
Okay, so sorry, just to be clear there, Neil, you expect the margin in the mining segment to remain high for the foreseeable future, is that?
As for the remainder of the year, as a percentage, it will remain high for the remainder of this year as we continue to close out some of these contracts and the revenues stay fairly flat and low.
Got it. And then I guess just within Q2 itself, it seemed like there was maybe a put and a take in terms of the closeout benefit in mining, but possibly some sort of an offsetting unfavorable reforecast in power. I'm just wondering if we look at those, say, in aggregate, would they have been of similar orders of magnitude, or would one have been much bigger than the other one?
No, not quite. I think the power, I think you're referring to the MD&A discussion, I guess. I think we had some unfavorable in 2015 as well. As we had mentioned or reported at the time, we had something similar but yet a smaller size in 2016. So,
okay, got it.
Yeah.
And then with respect to the oil and gas margins, you know, they were quite strong in the quarter, a nice pickup versus where you were in Q1, and that sounds like it was notwithstanding the fact that Valaris continues to have some challenging conditions. Is there anything unusual there, or is this a level we should think about as being sustainable for the foreseeable?
Well, I think it was in Q1 we did talk about the fact that we expected the margins to recover as some of the larger projects got kicked off and we began to make progress within that. We are cautious about the oil and gas sector on the basis that there continues to be cost pressures throughout the market with the customer base. But I think, you know, we're really pleased with the response that we've had so far, where we've been able to effectively protect the margins by reducing our G&A within the sector at the same time as maintaining the basic gross margins in these particular contracts.
Okay, great. Thank you. And then just a last somewhat of a housekeeping question. In the past, you've provided color around the amount of your cash balance that you felt you needed to hold to run the business. I'm wondering if you can update us on what that amount is and whether or not it's changed at all in view of the comments that Sylvain made around, you know, working capital and the completion of your last legacy project, et cetera.
I think at this stage, from a balance standpoint, we still think, you know, the $1 billion mark is still good considering our projects, where they're at, the JVs that we have. So I think that number is still good for now.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. If you find that your question has been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing *2. And we'll take our next question from Anthony Zisha of Scotiabank. Please go ahead.
Hi.
With reference to your guidance, you're mentioning that oil and gas and power will be the main contributors to net income in 2016. Could this be the case in 2017? And Neil, could you give us some of your prospects in the Middle East?
Well, certainly oil and gas in 17 will, so will power. And I think, as we've said before, the continual increase in performance, the improvement of performance within infrastructure is also contributing towards that. And I think we see that these three sectors are effectively going to drive our earnings this year and highly likely in next year. We're not really counting on the mining sector contributing a great deal next year. And I think in terms of the prospects, we are particularly pleased with the amount of prospects that are beginning to come forward in power, particularly in nuclear. And again, you know, it's a highly attractive market where the work that we do and the margins associated tend to be a bit higher on the average. And in oil and gas, it is very much, the prospects side is very much dominated by a number of things that we are continuing to do in the Middle East. So some of the projects are completing or getting near to completion in Australia, the likes of Gorgon. But ultimately, there's a number of projects in the Middle East, for a variety of countries that we see in the business development prospects list. So we're pretty upbeat about all of that.
Okay, great. And my last question, could you give us some color with reference to M&A targets? Like, are there any domestic opportunities, or would you have to look at the U.S.? And would you be willing to increase your exposure to infrastructure? And are there certain sectors that you would want to avoid at this time?
Well, I think in general terms, I mean, we're not particularly looking at the resource sector, but I think, as I'd mentioned, in the last couple of quarters, if we were to move on looking at M&A, then it would probably be a bit different these days than maybe 3 years ago when all four sectors were fairly robust. So we'd be a lot more interested in looking at either sectors or geographies that had good visibility around the capital spend. So I think infrastructure is a possibility, but it's just one of a number of possibilities.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Thank you. And we'll take our next question from Sarah O'Brien of RBC. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Can you comment on, are there any revenue concerns that you might have into the back half of the year or 2017 based on backlog duration as you see it now? I mean, your run rate has been kind of $2 billion-ish for the last couple of quarters. I'm just wondering if you expect any significant change from that going forward based on current backlog.
No, I don't think so.
Okay. And then in terms of M&A readiness, in your prepared comments, four quarters of profitable E&C, is this the right time to make an acquisition in 2016? Is that something that we can talk about now that the profitability is well on its way?
I think we've said quarter by quarter that our priority is very much around sustainable earnings, about predictability. So we're pleased that we've got our fourth quarter under our belt, but we're not going to immediately jump off and say, four quarters done, therefore, we are really keen to go off and do a transaction. We continue to look at the opportunities available, and if the right thing came along and we felt it was it fitted strategically and it was going to be, accretive, then we would consider that. But I don't think you should look at it as four quarters done, therefore the next thing we do is going to be M&A.
Okay. And maybe if you can talk in terms of the 407 sale, I'm just wondering if there's any kind of update on that, and should we think of that completely separately as the monetization of the other Canadian assets?
Again, it's I think we've been fairly clear for a number of quarters that the 407 and the monetization of the other assets are separate. They are two different subjects. And I think I also clarified the past couple of quarters that, we don't see any potential M&A activity in the future necessarily being linked with the sale of 407. And we don't have a process or plans at this stage to have a process to monetize the 407, and that's still the position today.
Sorry, can you just clarify that you don't have a process or a planned process to monetize 407, meaning it's not for sale right now?
That's correct, same as it was for the last three quarters.
Okay, one last question. Neil, you commented you're still looking for 7% annualized EBITDA margin for Core E&C. Is that for the full year 2017, or does that mean within 2017 you look to achieve the 7%?
Well, I mean, first of all, it's not guidance, it is a target. So we're still working on all of the things that we need to do to get there. I think we've made really, really good progress to date. And operational excellence is certainly one of the other key components that we are looking to implement through the remainder of this year in order to get to that target. But the aim would be, as we've said in the document, an annualized 7%.
Okay, so at some point within 17 to reach 7%. Is that the way we should think about it?
An annualized 7%, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. I will take our next question from the line of Frédéric Bastien of Raymond James. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. Just wanted to circle back on the power opportunities. When you sold out to Link, you mutually agreed with MidAmerican to pursue transmission and distribution development opportunities. Is this initiative that S&C is still actively pursuing? And if so, could you provide any related commentary?
Yeah, I mean, it was not an exclusive agreement. It was an opportunity. If good opportunities arose and it was mutually beneficial, then yes. I think we've said before that's been, nothing much has actually come out of that to date, but the agreement is still in place. It's open there. If they've got an opportunity that they would like our help with, or if we generate an opportunity that we can take to them, then that's still an option that's there, but we haven't done very much to date.
Okay, but if we look at more broadly speaking, the investments in that particular space are fairly healthy, particularly in the U.S. Is this a market that is of interest to you guys?
Yes, we're definitely interested in that market.
Okay. Thanks. I'll leave it there. I don't have any more questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And we'll take our next question from the line of Benoit Poirier of Desjardins. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good afternoon, gentlemen, and congrats for the solid results. Just come back on the M&A. Could you provide maybe Neil or Sylvain more details on the matrix you will be looking for in terms of size, either geographies or kind of valuation matrix?
Yeah, I mean it's pretty difficult to do. Again, we you know, we are looking at, we're constantly looking at opportunities by sector and by geography and ultimately by capabilities. I think the only real shift in our thinking over the last year or so has been, a couple of years ago when we were looking at M&A, we were looking very much at sectors because all four sectors really, to a greater or lesser extent, were, you know, attractive and more stable than they are today. And I would say that the change in thinking is very much around, you know, we would like to invest in geographies or in sectors where we saw a good outlook in terms of capital spend. So that's a slightly different sort of take on future M&A. And it's pretty difficult to say anything more than that.
Okay, perfect. And just for two key projects for you, could you maybe give an update on the Champlain Bridge and Eglinton LRT, Neil?
Well, Champlain Bridge is going pretty well. We've got, certainly as of this morning, we've got three of the foundations set in the water. And things are going pretty well there, going along, making good progress. And then Eglinton as well, I think everything's pretty much on track. But it's very, very early days, even earlier in terms of Eglinton, but pretty much on track.
Okay, thank you very much for the time.
Thank you.
Thank you. Once again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1. And we'll take our next question from the line of Bert Powell of BMO Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Neil, oil and gas in the second half will have more of the products coming out of Valaris, and you've rationalized some of the facilities there. Does that have a more than positive impact or disproportionate impact on the margins to be expected in the oil and gas in the second half?
Yeah, I mean, what we're finding specifically with the market that Valaris addresses is that things have been drifting a bit to the right. So it's not necessarily things, you know, we're not seeing lots of things being cancelled, but we are seeing things being delayed and moving to the right, not necessarily going away. So that's really been part of, you know, what's affected us in the first half of this year. And clearly, if a couple of these contracts that were pretty well progressed on in terms of negotiations actually get kicked off, then that will have a positive impact in the second half of the year.
Okay. And what's you know, this is a, and I guess maybe at some level not overly surprising, but bookings in the oil and gas space were as low as they've been for a while. How's the opportunity set looking for you going forward?
Yeah, I think overall, probably suffering a little bit from the pretty extraordinary bookings we made in Q1, I think.
For sure. Yeah.
You know, we sort of tend to, you know, we tend to look at the business and we're particularly pleased about the fact that, you know, we're sitting at $4 billion, which is a good place to be. So a number of our contracts, I think across three sectors in terms of oil and gas, power and infrastructure, and maybe even infrastructure in particular, you know, are the contracts that we are pursuing are particularly large and lumpy. So I think it's all about a longer, consistent trend. So being, you know, being at $12 billion for the last, an average of $12 billion for the last 12 months, you know, is a good place to be. We look at the oil and gas business, $4 billion in oil and gas. We're really happy with that. So I you know, we do see ups and downs quarter by quarter, particularly within these sectors.
Okay, thank you. And on O&M, 550 comes out of backlog for the sale of the facilities business. What would that mean for, like, what would be the duration of that? Is that revenue come out in 1 year? Just got to think about factoring that in.
Well, the revenue impact for on an annual basis is about 260.
260, okay, that's exactly what I was asking. Okay, that's great. Thank you.
Thank you. It appears that there are no further questions at this time. Mr. Jasmin, I'd like to turn the conference back to you for any additional or closing remarks.
Thank you all for having joining us today. If you have any further questions, please do not hesitate to contact me. Have a good day. Bye now.
This concludes today's call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.